Just for more of our viewers who have joined us, welcome to our Citywide Candidates Forum. My name is Mona Davids, and I am the founder of Little African News, New York Voice News, and the podcast Real Talk with Mona Davids. And I am joined by my co-sponsor, Maria Danzillo of One City Rising. This is the second candidate who is running for public advocate, Mr. Marty Dolan, who is joining us now. And I will pass it over to Maria.
Okay, thanks, Mona. And thank you all for joining us tonight. And to our community partners, thank you again. Some of you might know Marty because he ran for Congress against AOC last year, one of the bravest men in New York City, perhaps. So since time is at a premium, I'm going to jump right in and let Marty. Marty has his opening 3-minute statement so we can hear from Marty. And then I'll turn it back to Mona for some questions and we'll go back and forth with some tough questions for Marty. Okay.
Okay, well, thank you to the organizers very much. Mona, Maria, thank you, everybody else. And I'm going to start with one word, which is imagine. And by that, I mean imagine a fresh start. Imagine when you get a new job, you have a new relationship, and your whole life feels energized. Well, that's what I think New York needs. I've been a business doctor for 40 years. I helped clean up the environment. I helped the world recover from disasters like the World Trade Center attack. And when things feel really impossible, like the dramas going on in New York these days, you need leaders who don't complain, but who can lead. And what I see about New York is that everything's gotten too complex. I've seen this in businesses for the last 40 years. It's like the city's trying to do everything for everybody. They're trying to do 10 or 20 things and they're not doing them well. And it's really a one-way street. When people say, I love New York, sure. But how does New York love you? What can we be doing to make things better for you? So I'm a policy guy. I'm gonna start with 4 quick policies. First, NYCHA. NYCHA is now a one-way street. NYCHA, but it's hard to get out. It's like the Hotel California. We need exit routes for our long-term residents. I propose that the pension fund should offer mortgages to the good tenants, along with equity. What equity you have built. A simple example might be you get an $80,000 mortgage and a $40,000 transferable equity voucher. Now, you don't have to take it. You can stay just the way you are. But we want to get people a fresh start. And we can do this. We don't have to worry about Trump. We don't have to worry about the Republicans or anything. This is in our capacity to do it. And for some reason, it hasn't been done. This is a $20 billion injection into our neediest communities. Secondly, we need fast start accounts. And by that, what I mean is no taxes for those who are under the age of 26. We need to get our kids off rolling with Dolan or just rolling into the workforce. So on your 26th birthday, you get back all the taxes that you paid. You can buy a property with that money if it's in New York. You can repay a student loan or you can go back to school. The whole point is to get everybody cranking at a young age. I've had 3 pass through 20 to 25 and it's really hard right then. Family tax accounts and cumulative tax accounts. So the way this works is if you're a mom, a dad, a guardian of a kid, you get a rebate when they pay their taxes. So if they pay 30 or 40,000 bucks of taxes, you get 10 or 15% of that back. Why? Because you're the person who sat at the kitchen table with them. You're the one who instilled the values with them to go to school and see what they've achieved. A cumulative tax account is what you get when you pay your taxes 5 years, 6 years, 7 years in a row. So, you know, we tax everybody the same, whether they come in here for a year or whether they're here for 7 years. The backbone of our city are middle-class taxpayers, and we need to support them with, you know, a trip to Disneyland every 7 years or some cash that they can use to, where we say, you love New York, we love you back. We recognize what you're doing every day, knocking out your taxes. And lastly, congestion pricing, but for through traffic. All those highways in the Bronx and Queens, which were my home boroughs, they're built for truck drivers and commuters, not for you. There's a concept called carbon neutral, which talks about the environment. But I think our outer boroughs should be congestion neutral. If we have to have highways through there with pollution, congestion, and asthma, let the people who are creating that problem pay for it. Let's cover those highways. Those passing through shouldn't leave a footprint. I will never speak badly of another candidate who goes into public service. So Advocate Williams, for example, is a very righteous man who believes in racial equality. Well, so do I. But there has to be a balance. You have to look at all the issues. And if New York City was a sports team, if this was draft night or the trade deadline, you'd have to conclude that the leadership team has failed New York for the last 4 years. Another 4 years with the same approach will be the same result. So I'm offering a fresh start.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I just want to talk about one of the things that we hear a lot when it comes to the public advocate's office, or for folks who actually know there is something called a public advocate's office. There has been a push for the last few years to actually abolish the public advocate's office. So my question to you is, in your opinion, is the public advocate's office a critical office for good government in New York City? And if so, why?
Okay, sure. So New York is a $27 trillion economy. $27 trillion. It's a $120 billion budget. And run by 50 city councilmen, maybe 30 or 40 state assemblymen, state senators, and a mayor, none of whom have any financial training at all. It's a bit like you've got 80 bumper cars, all with gas pedals, and nobody with a brake pedal. And the way I would visit the public advocate office being a real plus for the city of New York is in what I call strategic thinking, long-term thinking. And I think that what every company I've ever seen has this, where they have the people doing the operations of the entity, and then they have one party that is looking out 3 years, looking out 5 years, looking out for example, we're going to have drone taxes. We have roads that are coming in. We have capital projects. And I think that strategic planning office, I think the public role would be very valuable to the city. But as it is, what happens is the public advocate role has descended into something which is an office of complaint. And that's the problem, which is it's just a complaining place. It's not a suggestion box. And that's what we need to change.
Okay, I'll pass it on to Maria.
Yeah, one thing we didn't talk about before with Jennifer is Rikers Island. And that's another subject that is on the minds of many New Yorkers. The plan that the city council passed was to build four smaller borough-based jails that would have approximately 40% less total inmate capacity. And many residents of these areas where the jails are supposed to be built are complaining that it's very inappropriate siting locations for large jail facilities. Some of these neighborhoods are already very crowded. And also the jails themselves don't have the capacity that is needed to house the current population of incarcerated individuals. So can you talk a little bit about what your philosophy is as public advocate in regard to Rikers Island? Do you think it should remain open with better training for guards and renovated, for example, to include mental health and drug rehab facilities? Or do you think it should be shut down completely? And what would you advocate for as public advocate on this important issue?
So I think if it ain't broke, and it is broke, but if it ain't broke in terms of its location, don't fix it. I think an island is a great place for a prison, if you have to have a prison. And I think the focus should have been on fixing what's wrong with Rikers Island and rehabilitating the building, rehabilitating our corrections officers. And it's been a bad idea to spread this out into the boroughs. So it's no surprise that the complaints by this. I'll point out that we had, you know, we have this peculiar relationship where our prisoners are shipped upstate. And unfortunately, there's been a series, one thing after another, where the prisoners have been killed. And this is a real problem. I've been to the most recent protest, Robert Brooks. And I think this comes back to what I have really campaigned on, which is higher standards. We just don't have high enough standards in New York. We don't have high enough standards in the corrections department, in the schools, in the police. And you can't have a culture in the corrections department where you have a shoddy prison and you have, for whatever reason, you have a prisoner who's transferred from one place to another and is killed along the way. This has got to be completely unacceptable. But as far as Rikers, I would have fixed it where it is. And I think even the residents of the other boroughs would accept if there was a temporary period where they were having to move people to Rikers as they were, you know, rehabilitating it. I think people would understand that. But moving out into all into the other boroughs doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay. You mentioned our police offices, the NYPD. In your role as public advocate, you can introduce legislation. And our current public advocate, Jumaane Williams, most recently introduced legislation on solitary confinements in Rikers Island, as well as the How Many Stops Act. So my question to you is, again, what type of legislation would you introduce? And, you know, would you introduce legislation supporting or increasing the NYPD budget and the number of police officers, considering how short-staffed we are?
The quick answer is yes, we need more police. And we need more police until the crime goes down to the point where people say we have too many police. And we have people getting set on fire on the subway. We have people getting hit in the head as they're walking down the sidewalk. The simple answer is in the short term, you need to put more police until the problem is solved. In the long run, what can happen is that you've got, for every policeman, there's about 300 citizens. And the only way that the police can work is if there's a good relationship between the one cop and the citizen. Public advocate did a lot to undermine defunding police and put the glue. There's glue between the 300 people and the policemen. You undermine that confidence, the whole thing falls apart, which is what you've seen. So I think we need to back our police. Police are a constant in every society all over the world. I think we need more for the police with technology. They spend a lot of time pushing paper. It spend a lot of time with bureaucracy. And in the short term, I think we need to raise the budget, have more public safety, and then we need to find ways to make it more efficient so that we can do more with less. But for example, what the public advocate should be doing is we should be having seminars for the people on what does the Fourth Amendment mean. Well, everybody understands what their Miranda rights are. We've seen that all on the TV shows. Everybody understands the Fifth Amendment, but we need a common understanding of what the Fourth Amendment means, freedom from unreasonable stop and seizure. And that's a great role for the public advocate to get out to the community with the police stations, with community leaders and say, listen, these guys can't do their job unless we all work together.
Okay. I'll pass it on to Maria.
Okay. Let's talk about education for a bit. So we have community partners, Place NYC, a wonderful advocacy group that has been fighting for rigorous curriculum and real G&T and quality education for every New Yorker. And I would like to turn our discussion over to your priorities as public advocate. So our education budget is now over $42 billion and is nearly one third of our city budget, while enrollment has declined and student achievement rates are at an abysmally low level. How will you advocate for quality education? How would you use your powers as public advocate to ensure that tax dollars are going towards student and classroom needs instead of DOE administration? And also, if you could talk about, as public advocate, how you will appoint representatives to the citywide councils, including high school, English language learners, and special education. So if you could just talk about your education philosophy, especially around G&T, rigorous curriculum and merit, and then selection process for appointing people to important boards.
It's the most important topic in my platform. And changing the mentality of the city around education is number one. So if you start way out around the other side of the world and you think about the technology, technology is really the biggest factor in the world right now. And we have jobs going all over the world. You know, technology has made it beneficial for consumers in the United States. You can get stuff delivered at home. You can go on a flight. You can bounce a selfie off of a satellite. But technology is hunting jobs. So all those houses in Queens and Brooklyn where, you know, the people would go down the block and they would work at the Brooklyn Navy Yard or they would work at the Steinway, you know, piano factory, those jobs are all gone. But our school system hasn't changed. Our school system is still cranking out the same product. When the kids are graduating at 18 and they're competing with, you know, programmers in the Ukraine, people who are doing robotics in Korea. So, and you can, that's the number one thing affecting the labor market, which is that technology is hunting jobs. And whenever it finds a $100,000 a year job, it eliminates it or reduces it. So we have to get it. So the public education system is turning what I call learners into earners. So we have to change the mentality that kids are kind of okay until they're like 10 years old and they learn the ABCs. We look at the curriculum. We have to look at more regular testing. And we need to look at getting these kids so that by the time they're 21 or 22, they're earning money and they're in a job with dignity. Right now, the school system is producing a very mixed result. We have to look at everything. So I think really what the city should be doing is they should be cutting costs on almost every other budget once they can figure out how to do it and really reinvesting in a new school curriculum.
Okay, thank you. Before we close up, can we talk a little bit about your transportation policy, especially around regulating electric vehicles, e-bikes? This is a big topic for us West Siders and many people around the city where we know the city, the Department of Transportation has invested a lot of money in building bike lanes that are unused in the outer boroughs and very underutilized many places in New York. And at the same time, we've seen a dramatic increase in accidents occurring by e-bike riders who aren't licensed, regulated, or insured. So we would love to hear your what you could do as public advocate to help address this crisis of lack of street safety.
Well, you know, this all came from good intentions. The idea was to put in the bike lanes, and then, you know, motorized bikes became a thing. Most people don't understand that bikes are basically motor vehicles, even if they're just pedal bikes. They should be governed by motor vehicles. I think the answer is that, you know, here's a good example. You've got the community boards. You have, you know, 51 community boards, 58 community boards, and they meet every month. And you have all this great feedback there. It's like the public advocate has this retail chain of listening posts around the city, but the public advocate is not connected to those community boards. I would connect the public advocate to the community boards as a matter of regular practice so that every morning you're coming at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning. And so what you would have seen if the public advocate was focused on this issue instead of focused on one issue, these complaints have been around for a long time. And then you need to really be effective as a leader. You need to say, you get with the police department, you get with the Department of Transportation. you need to have traffic monitors in the busy places. Now, the e-bikes aren't so bad all over the city. They are terrible on the Upper West Side, where I spend a lot of time on the Upper East Side. You can practically get killed crossing the street. But you have to problem solve. You have to be alert to the feedback. And I think the current public advocate has been very focused on one issue. It's a good issue, which is racial equality. That's fine. But if you have a problem like that and it's coming through the community board system and you're hearing it, you have to do something about it. So I think that's where you put the trainee policeman. It's where you maybe create a new class of law enforcement officers, you know, the junior people coming in, because it is a system of broken windows. When you start to see one thing go wrong in a city, even in the prisons. So if you're seeing that the prisons are bad, it gets into the mentality everywhere else. You need high standards everywhere, and you need somebody who's there every day looking at the reports from the community boards and taking action.
Do you support banning e-bikes from city parks, from Central Park and other city parks?
I think you have to go almost on a park-by-park basis. I think some of the parks are pretty small. Some of them are pretty large. I think you have to look at what they're doing in Central Park, which is putting more delineation between where the bikes can go, where the walkers can go, and where the pedestrians can go.
Sounds great. So we're just about out of time. So we'd love to give you a minute or two to make a closing statement. And we thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was a privilege to have you here. And we wish you very best of luck in your campaign. And thank you for stepping up.
I'll finish by saying this, which is, for the last 10 or 12 years, had a mayor squabbling with the governor and governor squabbling with the mayor. And now you have a president. The way the Democrats can succeed, the way we can all be proud of being Democrats going forward, is to fix our problems. So in New York, you have control of the state assembly, the state senate, the city council, and there's no reason to be complaining about Donald Trump. It's our fault if the schools aren't good. It's our fault if the subways aren't good. And so we have to accept responsibility. And the second that we create positive programs for change that are ours, that's nationally.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Marty. And again, everyone, please remember to commit to vote. We have some great choices in the public advocate race. By the way, for those of you who are on the call who are members of One City Rising, our political club, we will be having an endorsement meeting next week. So you'll be getting an email on that as well. So hopefully you're getting information tonight so we can have a good election next week. That's on Tuesday, May 13th. Okay. Thanks again, Marty. Bye.